And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, after seeing... Wow, I've already messed this up. We're like 20 seconds in. In this episode, after seeing his parents in a strange vision, Ezra believes that they must still be alive. He heads back to Lothal for answers, while the Empire comes to Garel, hoping to crush the rebellion. We follow the White Lock Cat this week, but because we're talking about legacy. How you doing, Chris?
Good.
Wow, that was rough.
Yeah, well, just before we started recording, I was just having some stunning examples of piss enunciating my worms. Just sort of stumbling over everything. So it should be an entertaining show tonight, guys.
Oh my god, this is going to be a feel show. Like, ugh, this... I have a lot of things to say about this episode, and a lot of it, and I made sure to make a note, but, like, I had to go on Twitter and, like, make a huge thread thanking Jonna Marie and Ma from Geeky Bubble, who was on our show a few months ago, for this episode, because I didn't used to like this episode, because I didn't used to like Ezra, so watching this again, now that I love Ezra, it was like watching it with brand new eyes, and, like, I was emotional at the end, like, I was very emotional at the end of it. So, I actually have a note just to kind of date this episode. We're recording this episode the day after Father's Day, and it felt really significant to me because I was writing my notes for this on Father's Day because this is, like, following all these articles. Like, so many people publish articles about how Kanan is, like, one of the best dads in Star Wars, and I was like, he is the best dad in Star Wars! So, I had a lot of fun watching this episode.
He might be the only good dad in Star Wars.
I'd say Bail Organa.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah.
I throw out Bail Organa as a really good dad. I haven't delved into a lot of his books, but like he sure as hell loved Leia, and he protected her, and so I would throw out Bail. What are some other good dads in Star Wars?
But I think
Galen Erso tried. He was just in the beginning, just stuck in a bad situation from beginnings, but I think Galen tried really hard for Jyn.
Yep, but he had that fatal flaw.
Yeah. Cut Laquane. Cut Laquane from Clone Wars is a damn good dad. Because okay. He took in two kids that were not his and raised them and loved them, and yeah, Cut Laquane's a damn good dad.
Well, Kanan's the only one of all of them who's an actual, like, major character. Like Bail Organa had some parts in the prequel trilogy, but as Leia's father, he wasn't really, like, you know, he was a background character. He wasn't seen as Leia's father, and Cuthla Quain's just in one episode.
Yeah, he's in the Ahsoka novel a little bit, Bail Organa is, and there's actually a scene with him and Leia, and, like, he's, like, it's from his point of view, and he's just, like, I will do anything to, like, protect her and to take care of her, and I would do absolutely anything, and from a certain point of view, it has, like, him and his wife's, like, dying moments as the Death Star is attacking, and mountains are folding in on them, and all he can think about is Leia being alive and not there. And I was sobbing during that one. I was like, don't tell me about mountains folding in on Bail as he's thinking about his daughter.
Not only is she not there, but she's watching, though.
Yeah, she was thinking about them. But yeah, I Kanan is probably... it's not even probably. He's one of the best dads in Star Wars, and Hera's one of the best moms in Star Wars.
Not I actually a whole have a lot note. Of moms in Star Wars.
There's not even, but the thing is, they don't really ever feature moms. Like, there's moms, but how many do we see? Padme doesn't get to mom. We don't really see a lot of, like, and I'm saying this from the point of view that I haven't read Bloodlines yet. And I know that there are some Leia and Ben Kylo, Ben.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But I haven't read Bloodlines yet. But, like, so we don't really get to see Leia mom that much. Like, I would argue
Aunt Burr is the best mom in Star Wars.
Yeah. She had a great story from a certain point of view, too, because she was like, I had dreams, but then I got Luke, and you know what? I'm going to damn well make him blue milk and raise him as my son because I love him. And I was like, good for you. So it always makes me mad when people are always like, because I was actually listening to Sky Talkers podcast today, and they were talking about how Luke's an orphan. I was like, technically, but he was raised by his aunt and uncle, and they were his parents. Like, that's not being a real orphan. He had family. I was just like, you can't say that, Sky Talkers. I've had a great week, too. I've discovered, like, 4 new Star Wars podcasts. Like, I just started Sky Talkers today, and I started listening to Lipstick and Lightsabers last week, so that was a lot of fun. Speaking of Lipsticks and Lightsabers, I have a cool little announcement. The episode should be out by the time this episode comes out, because the episode should be coming out the same week that we're putting up our episode for Sean last week. If my math is right and I know how to count. So Lipstick and Lightsabers is a podcast that's run by two lovely ladies named Shannon and Alex. And they wanted to do a podcast about featuring, like, women's stories about women, for women, in Star Wars. And they do, like, normal episodes. Like, I just finished their review of Master and Apprentice. And they do, like, character feature episodes. Like, they did an episode just featuring LG... what's her name? The girl bot from Solo? LG-63? Anyway. They just did an episode with her where they, like, feature characters and they'll, like, discuss, like, that character. But something cool that they do is every week they open up the table for other people to submit their Star Wars stories. And every Friday they put up a woman's Star Wars story and, like, how they got into the fandom, what they do in the fandom and stuff like that. And I recorded my Star Wars story for them. And so by the time this episode comes out, it's going to be out, and I recorded my Star Wars story. And, of course, I had to talk about JGS and Jedi and talk about Chris and how I met Chris and stuff, because that's a really big part of my Star Wars story. But I also I talked about a lot of things that I've never talked about before openly with anyone, actually. It was the first time I've discussed things. And so I'm going to post it in the Two True Freaks page. You guys have probably already seen it by now, because it should be out by now. But I hope you guys enjoyed it, because it was a very emotional ride for me to write that and talk about it, and yeah, so I hope you guys enjoy that and take a look out for me. It's going to be over on Lipstick and Lightsabers, so,
and at two Freaks on Facebook, you'll find it there too.
Yeah, you guys will find it there. You better, I'm gonna share it, so,
and on Twitter, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll share it on Twitter as well. So did you have a good week?
Yeah, so far so good.
Sounded like you were very productive.
I got a lot of podcasting and podcast editing done this weekend, and home stuff done too. So yeah, it's been a busy weekend, but fun. Got a lot of stuff done.
Yeah, I had a pretty busy weekend too. I helped my best friend move, and then we, of course, had Father's Day yesterday, so I was doing stuff with my family and did this outline somehow miraculously. And yeah, it's just been go, 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 go. I will say, I did get to watch Thrawn Twitter freak out today, because all Del Rey books did was release a little bit of the backdrop, like the back cover. They just released a little bit of it, and people are coming up with, like, fucking crazy fan theories up the wazoo. Oh, because all it was a quote from the 2015 Thrawn book, which is open, which is, a warrior may retreat, he does not flee. He may lie in ambush, he does not hide. He may experience victory or defeat, he does not cease to serve. which is a quote from the Thrawn book. And then they have at the bottom, but a servant with divided loyalties is no servant at all. And everyone's just like, what does that mean? Because we know Eli's coming back in the third book, and everyone's like, Eli's back! Does that mean Thrawn's going to have to kill Eli? And if Thrawn kills Eli, I'm going to go walk right up to Timothy Zahn.
Oh, they're playing you guys like fiddles.
What?
They're playing you guys like fiddles.
I know, I know. I'm going to walk right up to Timothy Zahn at Dragon Con if he kills Eli, and I'm going to be like, thank you very much for this character. I love him very much. He will live on in my fan fiction forever. Because, people, that's how fandom works. If you don't like something, there's a magical world called fan fiction. Just take care of it there. Because, like, I'll be sad if he kills off Eli, but I'm happy to have him in the first place. So, I don't know. So, like, Thrawn fandom... flip the fuck out. That's really hard to say. If Thrawn fandom flip the fuck out on
Twitter.
That's
a tongue twister. I think that's officially a tongue twister. I think it's got enough syllables and everything.
Thrawn fandom flip the fuck out on Twitter today. It was fun to watch. And I was at work just going, I want to play too, but I'm at work. I want to play. So I don't know. I don't know. Thrawn Treason's out next month and I can't wait. It's probably going to be just about to come out by the time this podcast airs. So I'm going to have a fucking conniption when I read that book. Paul C. Kelly's reading the first one now. Paul, read Thrawn Alliance.
Well, Thrawn is remember, Thrawn is also a servant. So it might not be Thrawn's servant that it might be something Thrawn. Maybe Thrawn somehow turns on.
Well, that's the thing. So if you remember when we covered the books. Between Rebels and Clone Wars, the big bombshell of the Paul C. Kelly, I know you're listening right now, and I know you're reading the Thrawn book, so if you haven't finished it by the time you hear this episode, skip ahead like 2 minutes, because I don't want to spoil. I'm about to say a spoiler, so skip ahead in 3, 2, 1 now, because in the Thrawn book, the big bombshell was that Thrawn is there to either make the Empire better or destroy it from the inside. Because that's his real mission for the Chiss, because he's trying to either make them allies or destroy them. And so he's there serving the Chiss as well as the Empire.
So, yeah, it could be him betraying either one of those.
Yeah, and a lot of people are torn. Some people says that he's going to betray the Chiss, and, like, that's the whole thing with Eli coming back, trying to get him to serve the Chiss, and he's going to betray them, which would fit the Rebels timeline. Or a lot of people are theorizing that, like, he's going to make a choice to go against the Empire. Because this is also the timeline of this book is during season 4. Because there's a couple episodes towards the end of season 4 where Thrawn has to go back to Coruscant. And that's the time where, like, Kanan dies and Arrynda blows up, like, the gas refinery to kill Kanan and stuff like that. That's the time period that this book is setting in. So a lot of people are like, well, that's going to happen, and that's when he's going to turn against the Empire, and everything then happens in the finale. So there's a lot of theories about which way this book's going to go. Either he's going to use this as setup to leave in the finale, or he's going to use this as setup to betray the Chiss. I think betraying the Chiss is probably the most likely thing, but at the same time, I could see, like, the way that, like, dominoes are falling and how the rebellion's growing because of the 2015 Thrawn book. He could stop and go, well, you know, this is not going well. I'm going to start destroying this from the inside. Oh, God, space whales! So I think there's a lot of ways this could go. I just know that in about a month, my time is going to be sobbing into this fucking book. I can't wait. I'm so excited. I have feelings about it. I'm actually going to be talking about the Thrawn book tonight in our notes in about a minute.
I believe it.
Because Ryder Azadi is a character in the Thrawn book, and this is his first appearance. So, did you like this episode?
I did like this episode. I don't know if I liked it as much as you, but that's not because I particularly disliked it for any reason. But there's a quibble about this episode that was in like or this the Ezra's parents thing that sort of gets on my nerves a little bit, but not much.
You know, I generally I like have that. A quibble about the Ezra parents thing too, and I don't think I made a note about it, which is I wish we got just a little bit more for them, so it just hit the story a little harder. Like, whether it was, like, he came across old broadcasts and he got to listen to them, or, like, we had a dream or a flashback with Ezra with his parents, because the only time we actually see them is in visions, pictures, and is in visions and pictures. We don't actually ever get, like, Ezra's parents until Palpatine tempts Ezra in season 4. And that's the first time we actually see them, like, walking around and interacting and talking and stuff.
See, I don't think they should have even touched his parents till then. I think that's sort of my thing about this. I don't like the way they handled his whole parents thing, so it just sort of, it feels like they were trying to go one way, and then they decided not to go that way, but they should have changed the beginning of it. You know, they were set, you know, the way they set it up of, like, you know, oh, find your parents, oh, you know, but, or, you know, we have information to where your parents are and all this. It was just, I don't think it was, it seemed like they were going for to where he might meet his parents, decided they didn't want to do that, which I think was a good decision. But at the same time, when they pivot to this episode, and this episode is the sort of quote unquote resolution of it, it just leaves, and I know life is not, doesn't line up perfectly, but it leaves just sort of a awkward narrative that doesn't quite work, like, as character development for me. You know what I mean?
You know, that's why I thought, like, now seeing this the second time with the eyes of liking Ezra, I think having his parents possibly there is what sets him apart from a character like Ahsoka or Luke. And I'm going to talk about Luke in a minute, because they addressed that in Rebels Recon, which I took a note of. But the fact that he was a Jedi and a Padawan, like both of them, and he actually had parents. We know that Vader is Luke's dad, but when he starts the story, he thinks he doesn't have parents at all. He thinks that his parents were dead. And so I think that's kind of like where Ezra is a little bit different. And this is in my brain because I was listening to Sky Talkers and they were comparing Kaz to Ezra in Ahsoka, because Kaz has his parents. And he can talk to them and call them if he wants to and stuff. But I think I like the parents' narrative because it makes Ezra a little bit different from Ahsoka, who never knew her parents. All she knew was the Jedi Order. And which is addressed by Kanan in this episode. I have a note of that too. So I do like it. I can see where the execution is a little bit flawed, and especially for me, I just wish we got more of his parents to get to know Erephim and Mira a little bit better as people, without just, it's showing not telling.
I don't even think there is a, like, the whole storyline of his parents was actually a nothing, because it just puts him right back to where he was at the beginning. You had it established. His parents were gone, probably dead, you know, and they could have just gone from there. And I think Ezra pretty much emotionally had decided that they were dead. So then you have, like, this, like, oh, maybe they're alive. Oh, and at the end of it, the journey for him to go to there doesn't really change where he was in the beginning, you know?
I think it changes a little bit because Kanan said in the episode, like, wow, you don't talk about your parents. And I think it gave him a little bit of a, because so far season 2, we've been talking about how these are all transitional episodes. And I don't just see this as a transitioning Ezra episode. I see this as a space family transitioning episode together as a space family and kind of solidifying him more in that. Because I think, like, there was always, to me, I think Ezra, like, always had in the back of his mind wondering if they were alive. Like, because he, you know, in his head, like, he was like, they're dead. But, you know, there's probably a little part of him that's wondering because he doesn't know for sure.
Yeah, and but that's given.
But that's one of those things that's, like, if they never addressed it, then we would have an entire series going, what if Ezra's parents are alive? And what if they show up? Like, they could show up at any time. And, like, what will that do for the space family?
Well, and also, I'll say this. Well, we should wait till we get to the later parts of it, because I don't think he was given any decisive. I think he was told that his parents had died.
No,
but the story of how his parents, assumed. Huh?
He was never told. He just assumed.
Right. Well, the guy was like, your parents are gone. They didn't make it. So, but the story told, we'll get into it.
You're talking about this episode, not like a previous episode.
No, I'm talking about this episode. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to get ahead on it, but I don't think he's given definitive evidence that his parents are actually dead. If he wanted to have in the back of his head a glimmer of hope that they're still alive, you definitely could, because as I was watching it, I was just like, oh, well, that's how they could get out of that. We'll get to that, I think, part three, probably.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm rocking around a lot. I'm putting on socks. My feet are cold. There we go. Well, you ready to get into this one?
I am.
All right. Let me take a sip of my drink. Delicious. And I've got a burp. All right, that was a tiny one. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Legacy is the 26th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on December 9th, 2016. It was written by Henry Gilroy and directed by Mel Zweier?
I don't know, but it automatically gives you a little twang. Zweier.
Sorry, Miss Mel, if I'm mispronouncing that. Some extra information for you. Legacy's original title was known during and after production as The Secret of Prisoner X-10, and was only changed to its final title in September of 2015, only 3 months before it premiered. Ryder Azadi was Prisoner X-10 while he was incarcerated. Ryder Azadi is voiced by Clancy Brown. His other works include voicing Maul's brother, Savage Opress, back in Clone Wars, Venture Brothers, SpongeBob SquarePants, Thor Ragnarok, Sleepy Hollow, and Lex Luthor during the DC Animated Universe. Because it's me, and as you guys know, I've already talked about Thrawn already, I have to give you Ryder's background in the Thrawn novel, because it actually changed a lot of what I thought about Ryder. So here we go. Ryder was the previous governor of Lothal, before Governor Arenda Price, who is the current governor and shows up in Season 3. Minister Tula, from Season 1, worked for Ryder up until the time he was kicked out of office. Before the series, the Empire arrived and told him to stop Ezra's parents' radio transmissions, which Ryder ignored. He also discovered that Price Mining Company, owned by Arenda Price's family, had a vein of Dunium, a highly sought-after metal that would be used to build the Death Star. Ryder didn't want it to fall into the Empire's hands, so he sent a representative to try and buy the majority of the mine shares to keep it from the Empire. Good reasons. But when Arenda refused the offer, Ryder then blackmailed Arenda's mother and had her imprisoned to seize the mine from them. Because Ryder is, at the end of the day, a politician, and he framed an innocent woman and sent her to jail. Arenda's mother was eventually freed, and Ryder's plan failed. But he had made an enemy of Arenda Price. She later teamed up with a Moff of that area and had Ryder imprisoned for treason for supporting the Bridgers radio show. Grand Moff Tarkin then put Arenda in his place as governor before the start of the series. Which I thought, like, when I read that, like, because I remember Ryder from the show, and he was, like, good natured, and he was one of the good guys, and he was like, Ezra, like, I knew your parents, and, like, we're gonna be rebels, and it's fun. And so when I was reading the Thrawn novel, and I was like, he just blackmailed an innocent woman to get his way. And I was like, holy shit, Ryder, that's not cool. Because, like, he actually put Arenda on her path of villainy.
Well, I'm because saying, she, I've she always thought,
heard, huh?
Just from this episode, I thought he was sketchy as hell. I knew it all the time, Hope.
Yeah.
Sketchy as hell.
But it makes sense because, like, in Season 4, when Arenda and Ryder meet again, she's just like, oh, it's you! And, like, it adds so much because he destroyed her family. like, absolutely, like threw her mom in jail. His dad was in a depression. She lost her family's mind, and that was their livelihood. And Ryder did that for good. Like, yeah, it was good reasons to keep it from the Empire, but he's the one that put Arinda Price on her path to become a villain. Like, it's because of Ryder that Arinda went off and, like, became evil and, like, killed Kanan and all this shit. And I was like, holy fuck, Ryder. Yeah, but, yeah, Ryder got real sketchy in the book, so. Anyway, moving on. In Rebels Recon for this episode, they talked about how it was important for Ezra to not have a parent story thread pulling him away from the Rebels, which is why he believed his parents were dead in Season 1. They also didn't want to write a story for Ezra that was similar to Luke and Vader's, where Vader became Anakin again. They wanted to have a definite end to Ezra's parents, so Ezra could then be fueled in a different direction with the Rebels. They also talked more about what the Bridgers did. They were part of a revolutionary group that would speak out against the Empire. This was different from military strikes like we see in the show. The Bridgers were sending out transmissions to inform the populace about the Empire's evil acts. They were more making statements to make it politically hard for the Empire on Lothal. They also talked about how Gorel was only a temporary base and why they chose planets like Hoth and Yavin in the movies. The Rebels being on Lothal and Gorel brought a lot of heat on the population because the Rebels were there. They don't want the people to get in trouble, so the Rebels try to find uninhabitable planets. Gorel was always supposed to be a temporary place because they can't land all their ships there. Pablo Hidalgo worded it very nicely by saying, "You do not want to jeopardize a population by fighting for the virtue of the population." Which I thought was very telling because we see that, and I noted it later in the episode, because, like, them just being there just got a bunch of people in Gorel's houses blown up.
Oh, yeah, I was like, they should shoot down that Star Destroyer, and I'm like, ah, it'll take out the whole city. Never mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's tough. And I like that they made that note, too, because, like, we do see later in, like, the movies, like, why they're, like, on Hoth and Yavin, which are pretty much, like, there's no people that live there. Ewoks live on Yavin. It's fine. No, they live on Endor. Sorry, I misspoke. But, like, we don't, they go to start using these planets that don't have people, and it makes sense because we see it here, what happens when the Rebels are hiding in the middle of a city. The city gets half blown up. And there's probably a lot of casualties from
and all the ships that get in a fight crash into the city onto innocent women and children and families and teachers and mothers and babies.
That could have been the future chancellor, the one that saved us all and they killed him.
Yep.
You know who else likes to crash ships into innocent women and children and teachers? I don't know, Yoda. I'm sorry. I didn't have a good transition into you. How are you doing?
Not bad. Not bad.
You have a good week?
Yoda's week was okay. Boring. Just normal week.
Well, that's kind of funny. That's what my question is for you this week. I remember,
funny,
guys.
Funny strange or funny haha?
Funny that I have a feeling that Chris read the notes ahead and set that up. But just a reminder, you guys, we are running a little bit low on our Yoda questions. So you can leave a Yoda question in the comments of this episode over on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. You can send them to me on Twitter, and or you can just message them to me on Facebook, whatever. Whatever works best for you. I will know that if you leave comments or notes or Yoda questions on older episodes, I do not actively look for those. So you have to message them to me then. So just let me know if you do that. So I can then go back and pull them up. So, yeah. Yoda, you ready for your question?
Ooh, yeah, sure. Okay.
My question for you is, what's a normal day like in the life of Yoda from the time that you wake up in the morning to go into bed at night?
Oh. Normal day? Yoda wakes up. Drinks space coffee. Space coffee helps Yoda with certain Yoda functions. Then Yoda cleans feet.
Yeah.
Slowly. Carefully. Then swipe left, swipe right, swipe left, swipe right. Then Yoda takes nap. Then Yoda will go on Facebook and troll Ugly Yaddle's Facebook page.
You go to the Yaddle fan page and troll them.
Ugly Yaddle.
But she's dead. She can't defend herself.
Gets uglier all the time, Yaddle does. Then is Yoda's step fitness class, or space step fitness class.
Do you like to go and, like, look at the yoga instructor?
Yoga instructor in the next room. Yoda makes dumb jokes about how his name is almost yoga.
I'm the Yoda instructor.
Then Yoda goes home, watches Space Conan O'Brien, and Yoda goes to bed.
I'm glad you didn't. So that's a normal day. What's an abnormal day?
You will have to buy Yoda's coffee table book, you will. Pictures in it will be. Better than Madonna's book.
Is an abnormal day just Empire Strikes Back where Luke just shows up?
Sort of. Depends on definition of abnormal.
Some child just crashed their ship in my backyard. I guess I'll train them to be a Jedi.
Happens all the time.
I'll just train them, whatever.
Yoda does. One of the things that Yoda does.
You just reminded me of a story that my mom told me the other day. And it was about the yoga instructor. So my nephew Chandler is starting to get a little older. He's in the preteen stages of his life. He's not a little child anymore. And he was like, Grandma, I want to go to Zumba with you. And she's like, okay, well, we can go to Zumba. And she was all excited. She was like, my grandson wants to go to Zumba with me. Like, we're going to hang out. And it's going to be great. And when they were at Zumba, she noticed Chandler started kind of, like, getting closer and, like, moving towards the instructor and, like, moving behind her and was, like, watching her. And my mom was just like, oh, God. The teenage years have started. This is hormones. He didn't want to hang out with me. He wanted to look at the Zumba instructor.
Yeah. He's Googling yoga on his computer that night.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, I remember when I was like reading to him before he could read, and now he's looking at ladies' butts at Zumba. I was like, that's my nephew.
That's how it goes.
Yoda is proud.
Well, he takes after his aunt Hope, I guess. So. Cause I like a good butt.
Yoda's a butt looker too.
No butts about it?
No ifs, ands, or buts. Funny joke.
Funny joke. All right, Yoda. But we'll see you next week, okay? Bye. Go take watch your space Conan O'Brien and take a nap.
Swipe left, swipe right.
Ugh.
Wax on, wax off.
You swipe yes for the Mama the Hutts, and you swipe no for the Yaddles.
Well, yeah. That sounds about right.
And he's blocked from all the tadpoles because they're just
too
young.
He's blocked left and right, yeah.
Well, you ready to get into this episode?
I am ready.
Act 1?
Let's do it.
Act 1. We open with the ghost, Park on Garel, and we immediately hear the wee 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 of the Force. I like doing that sound effect. Wee wee wee. My favorite sound effect of the show. We zoom into Zeb and Ezra's room, and look at that adorable little Lasat sleeping on his bed like a big old purple kitty. He's all like, purr, purr. I've actually gotten a lot of debates with people whether or not Lasat's purr. And in my head, Lasat's do purr. So, yeah. Anyway. But Ezra isn't sleeping so soundly because he's having a Force dream. In his dream, he's standing on Pry Rock from The Lion King, staring at the two moons of Lothal. And he can hear his mom and his dad, but he can't see them. and suddenly he's in an Imperial jail cell, and there's a white lock cat who isn't that friendly. And then he gets a bunch of flashes, like him fighting, and TIE fighters, and his parents sitting in the Imperial cell, and a mysterious man. And he snaps awake, and he falls out of his bunk, and he's pretty shook. Pretty shook like a bobcat. Space Mom Hera and Space Dad Kanan are working on looking for a base for the Rebels when their space son comes sprinting in there wildly going, "Oh my god, Kanan, the Force!" And Kanan's like, "Yeah, the Force, it's a thing. What about it?" And Ezra's like, "My parents!" And Kanan's like, "Your Force parents? I guess that's me? I don't understand. I need more context." And Ezra starts explaining the dream to them, and it was so vivid that he is actually willing to talk about his parents with his space parents. And Kanan looks at his space wife and says it's time to show Ezra. And can I just say that the space parents are the best parents, because since season one, they took the information from SIBO way back from the episode's Empire Day episodes to try and piece together where Ezra's parents might be. And they know that the Bridgers were taken to 1 out of 1,000 prisons, and they've used every favor and contact to try and find the parents for Ezra, because space parents are the best parents. But in the end, they weren't able to find the Bridgers. Still, Ezra is super grateful and thanks them for trying. Meanwhile, the baddies are not being idle, and it's mean girl bitch season, as Admiral Constantine is snooting at the fifth brother and at the seventh sister. You see, if you remember last week, Ezra told a baby, who can't talk or understand words, that the Rebels are all hiding out on Garel, and the sister's probe droid had heard about it, because remember last week I was like, stupid protagonist. Well, Constantine really hates the Inquisitors, so he's just kind of ignoring them and saying that they're stupid and that their intel is all wrong, and he's just being a big old asshole to them, and the Inquisitors are being an asshole to Constantine, and it's great. But kicking in the door comes Alexander Kellis, who has been confirmed the Inquisitor's reports that the Rebels are in fact on Garel. So shut up, fucking Constantine. And Kallus and the sister exchange some sarcastic blows at each other, but Kallus has grown a thick skin to the Inquisitors after Grande, and he thinks that they can pull together, and he gives the command to deploy the fleet to Garel. Back with the heroes, Ezra is staring at a picture of his parents when Kanan and Hera calls him. They have a list of Imperial prisons that had a mass escape the previous night. And Ezra is super duper pooper sure that it's one of why he had the vision. And they must be alive. They have to be. And Kanan's like, slow your roll, kid. We don't know anything. And Kanan does know an old Jedi trick that could possibly point them in a direction to look. But Ezra has to open his mind and accept the truth, whether it's a good truth or a bad truth. And he has Ezra focus on the list and uses the Force as a Google search to look through it. And he briefly sees his parents in a vision, and he stops the list. And his Google search stopped on a particular person with the name Prisoner X-10, who was arrested on Ezra's home planet of Lothal for treason. Well, Ezra is super duper purple, wants to go back to Lothal, and Kanan's like, what part of slow your roll don't you understand? But Ezra knows that's why he keeps seeing a white lock cat, something that's only on Lothal, and he runs out of the room. And he frantically starts looking for his helmet so he can go to Lothal. And Hera is trying to talk to him Hera is trying to talk him out of it since Lothal has a blockade. But Sabine mosey up and says that she overheard Imperial chatter that the fleet had just left Lothal that morning. And Hera's like, wait a minute. What do you mean that they left Lothal? And Kanan brings Ezra his helmet, and the entire family volunteers to go to the Lothal with him to help find his parents. And the space family is ready to go, but they would be ready to go, but Chopper and Zeb are getting supplies in the market. And Zeb offhandedly mentions that he hasn't seen Imperial troopers all morning, which sets off Sabine, who realizes that this is a strategy. The Empire always pulls back its patrols before a major strike. Then, all the sensors on the Ghost start going off. And they look up, and there's Star Destroyers everywhere above them in the sky. Bum, bum, bum. What'd you think of Act 1? I liked this episode. It had a very definite, this is Act 1, this is Act 2, this is Act 3. And I was like, yeah, thank you, episode.
They were right, like, at the thirds of the episode. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, thank you, episode, for once, instead of having, like, 12 acts in an episode.
I thought Ezra's dream was visually, like, very similar, like, it was like a combination of Rey's Force vision in The Force Awakens and Anakin's dream that he has of Padme dying.
Mm-hmm.
Has that sort of tunnel of falling tunnel of smoke and just sort of getting dropped into all these different situations. And I thought that was neat visually. The sisters definitely can tell that Kallus might be softening up a little bit on the rebels. I noticed that. And is this the first time, you know, I know we've seen Jedi like manipulate a button on something or open a door because you could like push a button or something, you know, with your Jedi Force. But I don't know if we've ever seen Jedi like basically like going into like God mode on a computer, you know, just sort of operating the computer. I mean, I guess you could be using the Force to operate the buttons and stuff like that, but it looked like Ezra was pretty much just like Force communing with a computer. I don't know. I don't think we've ever seen that before.
The closest I think that we've seen kind of before, and even then this is a very far stretch of me saying this, is Quinlan Voss. And I guess whatever the new guy's name, Cal, whatever his name is in the new Jedi Fallen Order game that's about to come out. But they had the ability to touch an item and to, like, see, like, a snippet of it, of, like, of its past. And it's, like, to read an item and, like, see a memory of the item's past, like, where it's been or something.
Right, but that's, like,
but even psychic. Then, that's a very strong, like, long stretch to what Ezra is doing.
Yeah, that's, like, a psychic picking up the vibes off an object. This is Ezra, like, getting into the software and, like...
This is Ezra becoming an android and Google searching.
Yes, yeah, basically. And I don't think we'd ever seen it before. It was kind of... The more I was watching it, the more I'm like, yeah, I don't think anybody's ever really done that before.
Yeah, and I like that it was something that like, Kanan was taught, because he's like, yeah, it was an old Jedi trick. So, like, it's implied that other Jedi could do that if they want to. Which makes me go back to, like, Clone Wars. I'm like, why didn't they do that more with, like, Sifo Dyas stuff then?
There's all sorts of stuff that they could have, you know.
Yeah.
That's like taking cell phones and putting them back in all the old movies where nothing would happen because people would be able to call the cops with the cell phones and stuff. So, yeah, it was...
Now
that
I think about it, though, like, maybe... Because, like, Jedi have different specialties. Like Ezra's specialty is connecting with, like, animals and stuff. Quinlan Voss could touch items and read them and stuff. Maybe it was, like, a specialty that Kanan learned that we just, you know, we've never seen him use. But it could be something that he was particularly good at, so that's why he was able to teach it.
If Ezra is so good with animals, you'd think he probably wouldn't be that good with computers, but... Luke Skywalker could have been like, you know, Jedi could have taken over like battle droids. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If Ezra is Google, does that make Jacasa Nu ask Jeeves?
Oh, or just Jeeves. Yep.
Hello, I'm Jeeves. I'm Jacasa Jeeves.
Those are the only real notes I have for part one.
Well, for me. A lot of people, much smarter than me, have often compared Ezra and Luke together, but through the imagery of their respective planets. I've seen so many people have discussions about how Luke is on Tatooine with twin suns, and Lothal is Ezra's home and has twin moons. And there's much deeper symmetry going on here. I've seen a lot of people discuss, like, how Ezra's being taught the last of the old ways from Kanan, so the moons are setting, while the old Jedi are setting as well during this time period, while the new Jedi through Luke is rising like the twin suns of Tatooine. And I've read so many fascinating articles about it, but I kind of blanked as I was writing this note. I'm still kind of blanking on it, but that's kind of the gist of it, of how, like, Lothal's setting moons are like the setting of the old ways, and, like, when we get to A New Hope with Luke looking at the twin suns, that's like the rise of the new Jedi and the new order. So I like a lot of those similarities that Ezra has the twin moons and Luke has the twin suns.
Yeah, I think the similarities seem more similar to me the first time through. The second time through, I'm not, you know, I realize that they're there, but now that I know the characters, it doesn't feel as much as like, you know, Ezra's sort of like, there's sort of like, Kanan is sort of like functioning as Han and Obi-Wan at the same time to Ezra's Luke and stuff like that. And the parallels are there, but it doesn't feel as much like they're sort of versions of other characters as it did the first time through in the first couple seasons. You know, once you get a few seasons in, the characters have really fleshed out into their own. But once you flesh those characters out, you can't go back. So now when we come in, you know, we know all the ways that Ezra is not like Luke Skywalker in many, many, many ways. So
honestly, I can see Dave Filoni just being like, yeah, make two moons. It'll look cool. And then like people write articles about it. And I'll just let them wonder. Dave Filoni would just be like, it looks cool.
Yeah.
But people are going to write tons of articles, and he knows then. He's just like, whatever, it looks cool. I'll troll them. Speaking of Dave Filoni, this was just a cool little thing that happened during season 3 and stuff like that, and leading up to season 4. And this is the first appearance of the White Loth Cat. And Dave Filoni ran a Twitter campaign using the hashtag #FollowTheWhiteLothCat between season 3 and season 4 of Rebels. And I wanted to bring this up because this is the first appearance of the White Loth Cat. And he had a stuffed White Loth Cat that he took various photos of. Like, he had a picture of it on a train. He had a picture of it at a hockey game, on a plane, and stuff. And he did this hashtag leading up to the Season 4 panel of Fan Expo 2017 at Toronto, Canada, where they first, like, was, like, really showcasing a lot of the Season 4 show. And then he used it again, used this hashtag tag leading up to the series finale of Rebels for the last episode. But, like, I remember this time, and also thank you, John and Marie, for pointing this out to me, because I was just like, I know this was a thing, but I don't remember where. And she was like, I'm pretty sure it was this, but, you know, just to point you in the direction, and she was right. So thank you, Jonna, for that. But I remember this, like, this whole Follow the White Loth Cat campaign, because people were, like, losing their shit on Twitter trying to figuring out like what it was. They're like, what does it mean, Dave? What does it mean that the Loth Cat's at a hockey game? And you just know a lot, like Dave Filoni is just like watching hockey and just laughing at himself.
Yeah, it means Dave Filoni went to a hockey game is what it means. But,
and he brought a Loth Cat with him. Yeah. But it was kind of cool because like it kind of tied in with this episode, like the White Loth Cat kind of becomes, and I have that as my very next note. The Loth Cat kind of became a spirit guide to Ezra, and it becomes like one of his main spirit guides, like the Loth Cat and later on the Loth Wolves. And I like that it's like natural creatures from his home planet that's being used. But I also like that Dave used that as kind of like a guide towards the end of the series. It was a guide to this like big panel that was going to be revealing season 4 stuff. It was a guide to the final episode. And so like where the Loth Cat was a spirit guide to Ezra, he used it as a spirit guide for the fans too, and like the very final season. So it was just a really cool like few months leading up to the last season, when Dave did that. So it was really cool when I remember watching it on Twitter, and like because people were just losing their shit and like writing articles of like conspiracy theories of like what the White Loth Cat meant in the finale and stuff. So. And I like that the spirit guides to Ezra are things native to his home planet. You know, it's the Loth Cats, it's the Loth Wolves, like things that actually have like meaning to him. You know, we saw in season 1 him say this nursery rhyme to like figure out which way to go in the Jedi Temple to get his Kyber Crystal, and it comes up again later in season 4. Like, it's really cool to see, and I don't think we've really seen that really with any of the old Jedi, because like Ahsoka cared for her people, but she didn't have like a huge connection to her home. Kanan doesn't have a really huge connection with like his home planet, which I think is Coruscant. Don't quote me on that, but I think Kanan's home planet is Coruscant, if I remember correctly. But Ezra like has that emotional tie, and like that is his drive throughout the entire series. He wants to free Lothal from the Empire. Even when they leave Lothal and like they're with the Rebel base, like in season 3 and season 4, like that's his heart. And I think that's really cool that those are his spirit guides, are like animals that are very specific to his home.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this is the beginning of Ezra's getting led around by animals.
Yeah. My next note is, I like how Hera just rolls with the four stuff. Like, Ezra sprints in there yelling about the four streams, and she's like, yeah, it's Tuesday. She just takes it. She's like, yeah, it's a force thing. Whatever. She's so used to it, like, being around Kanan and four stuff. She's just like, eh, four stuff.
You get used to it.
Yeah. The man, they waited a long time to bring up the SIBO stuff from season one. Because I just about forgot about it until they were like, yeah, we got this from SIBO. And I was like, oh, yeah, they did get all this info from SIBO. And they sat on that for a long time, didn't they?
Well, then they wrote something like, oh, yeah, we've been working on this. But, you know, since we haven't found anything, it doesn't, you know, we decided not to get you involved in it and stuff. This is where all the, like, Ezra's parents stuff, doesn't work for it. Seems like it was something that they had planned a different way, changed their minds, and it just ends up being just sort of a side route. And this is like, oh, okay, yeah, oh yeah, SIBO, right, you know, that was a big deal a while ago. You know, and then it just disappeared. So yeah, narratively, it's just kind of weird.
I actually really loved that scene because, for one, it showed, like, what really good space parents Hera and Kanan are, because they didn't want Ezra to get his hopes up. And, like, that was the thing. Like, they didn't want to tell him about the, like, Gazebo just absolutely told them there's a 1 in 1,000 chance that you're going to find them. And I'd like that they, like, wanted to make sure they had something definitive to give Ezra, because if they just said, hey, there's a 1 in 1,000 chance we can find your parents, they knew that Ezra would obsess over that. And he wasn't being very open and talking about his parents. So I like that they were aware that, like, they wanted to have a, like, specific answer. And the fact that they, like, you know, they're in the middle of a war, you know. They could have called in their favors for, like, anything war-related. But they called it in for Ezra because they cared about him and they loved him. And I was like, these are really good space parents. They're the best parents. Because they wanted to help him because they loved him. And I thought that was a really nice moment to show how much they really did care for Ezra and that they had been working so hard in the middle of this war to try and do that for him. And I was like, they're the best parents ever.
Yeah. I mean, they worked it into something productive, but it was, you know, that's the thing is when I was looking at it, just like, oh, geez, you know, this is, you know, I'm not saying it can't be a good scene, but it's the pretext of that. The reason that scene is there is sort of narratively covering their asses.
You know, like it kind of goes back to what I was saying about how, like, I wish we had more of the Bridgers. And if anything, just to compare them to Kanan and Hera, because we know that Kanan and Hera are damn good space parents. Like, they love their crew. They will do anything for their crew and stuff like that. But we have all this context. We've seen it. We've seen how they treat them. We've seen how they respect the kids and stuff and respect their abilities and what they can do. But we don't really, it's the difference between showing and telling. We know this because we've seen it for a season and a half now for the space parents. We're just told about Ezra's parents, which is why I do wish we had, like, more flashbacks or, like, for a very snippet of a scene in Empire Day, like, we had, like, a flashback of Ezra's parents talking to SIBO. And it was audio of, like, you know, like, you need to take care of Ezra. And they're like, we're doing this for Ezra. Like, I wish we had more of those, though, just so we had, like, more emotional impact for everything. Because we really, everything that we see, like I said, of Ephraim and Mira is through visions or a picture. We don't actually ever see them doing parent things to Ezra. We're just told that they were good parents.
I'm happy with a good bit of stuff left to the imagination.
Yeah.
Or just that his parents are left as a sort of iconic thing that you can fill in that, like, you know, they were very good. You could tell they were good parents just because he's very self-aware and self-sufficient. But that they were, like, early proto rebels and they were great people is like, that's good enough for me. And, like, a few that, you know, and have you know, every once in a while someone says, oh, I knew your parents, they were, you know, great people or whatever. It's, but
your issue is the execution of all this.
Yeah, yeah. My issue is that, like, at some point they decided to make his, they probably thought they were going to bring his parents into the story, and then they decided not to, which was, I think, a wise decision. But I don't know if they'd, like, already filmed stuff or just went and, but either way, just the, like, it felt like it just got abandoned and then picked up, and it's like, well, we have to pick it up because we started it, but we'll just, you know, we'll do an episode to sort of resolve it, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then we won't even really completely resolve it anyway. So it was just sort of like this thing that looked like it was going to be a story element, and it turns out it's really not in the large scheme of Rebels. I mean, in Ezra's character it is, of course, yeah. But in the flow of the Rebels story, it's not really, there's not really much reason for it to be there.
You know, I don't mind that, though, because sometimes you just need a really good character-driven episode, because if they never addressed Ezra's parents again, there would always be that kind of dangly thread of, like, what if they're alive? Like, what if they're out there? What, like, it would be a big what if for the entire season if they
yeah,
never addressed
it. Yeah, well, they should have had, I think they should have had, if I was going to fix that, I would have had them die in front of Ezra's eyes. It started it out that way, and then that's that, you know?
Yeah, like, that to fix that for you would be, like, definitive season one, like, Ezra's like, no. Like, he, like, Batman did. Like, he's like, no, I watched them die.
Yeah. They're gone. Yeah.
Gone. Which could have been interesting, too, because he could have been, like, very against, like, Kanan and Hera trying to parent him. So, yeah. I see where you're coming from. This, I think for me, this episode just definitely hit me differently because I liked Ezra now, so it, like, connected with me differently from the first time I saw it. Because I think I felt a lot of the same way, too, the very first time I watched it. I'll talk about that more in Act 3, so. My next note is, I love the moment where the Seventh Sister points out that Kallus respects the Rebels. Because he's like, oh, but they've beaten you, but you seem to respect them even though they've beaten you. And Kallus is like, they've beaten you too, bitch.
Yeah, they've beaten everybody so far, so who's won? Yeah. Who's beaten them yet? You know, who's got a good record with them? Nobody.
Yeah, and it makes sense that Kallus does, and I think we actually talked about that 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. There was recently we were talking about that where, maybe it was the Rex episodes, where we noted that Kallus was respecting the Rebels more because he's understanding their tactics more and he's taking them more seriously than any of the other villains that we've seen. Because all the other villains are... What?
And they're still beating him.
But he's at least respecting them more than everybody else, because I think, like, it might have been a Constantine episode where Constantine was just like, oh, they're Rebels, blah, 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 and Kallus was like, no! No, it was the one with Titus, the Rex episode, Stealth Strike, where Rex and Kanan were undercover as stormtroopers. And Kallus was like, dude, you need to respect these guys. Like, they, I know what they're doing. And Titus blew them off. And Kallus got to rub his nose in it. That was the episode. And I like seeing this change in Kallus where he's just like, yeah, like, we need to be taking them seriously. Which is kind of like where the Empire and the Rebels are right now, because the Empire is not really taking any of the Rebels seriously. And Kallus is really the first person in the Empire in this time period that we've seen in the show that's really taking the Rebels seriously more than probably any of the other villains.
Because
even, like, Tarkin was just like...
Because they keep whooping his ass.
Yeah, because even Tarkin was just like, oh, they're just a bunch of little cells. We just need to make sure they don't have hope, because if they band together, then there'll be a problem. But right now, they're just little blah, blah, blahs. And Kallus is the first person that's going, guys, this is serious. This is serious. Serious business. My boyfriend's in that rebel cell. So, I have noticed as I liked Ezra's Google search abilities. And my last note is, I really just love how supportive the space family is of Ezra. Because, like, Sabine is, like, in the cockpit. She's like, let's go to Lothal. Like, we're going to go to Lothal. We're going to help you. And, like, mom and dad are there. And, like, I love how they're all willing to help Ezra find his parents. Like, this is a very solid base family episode, because everybody is supportive of Ezra in this episode, even if it meant that, like, I think there's something in the back of their minds that, like, if they find Ezra's parents, would Ezra leave? And I think they all kind of know that, like, there's a possibility, but they love Ezra and they want to help him. And I love how solid Space Family is in this episode. I love it.
And they know they got two more rebels too.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a lot of notes for Act One. I had surprisingly a lot of notes for this episode. I just kept finding things, so.
I'm not surprised, yeah.
So Act Two?
Act Two.
With the Imperials coming in, Hera tries to call Zeb and Chopper back to the ship, but the Empire has jammed their comms, and Chopper and Zeb meet a squad of stormtroopers in the hangar. So Space Mom goes to work, giving orders. Sabine is to unjam other communications to relay with the rest of Phoenix Squadron, and she tells Kanan and Ezra to get to Lothal, but they don't want to leave Zeb and Chopper, who, if we remember in the episode of Wings of the Master, they actually need Chopper because they need an astromech to use the Phantom's new hyperdrive, so they really do actually need to get Chopper. They can't leave without him. And Kanan and Ezra head out to the streets to find Chopper and Zeb, who are running for their lives from stormtroopers. Luckily, Kanan and Ezra must have been really close because they get there right away. And as they're trying to cover for their friends, Chopper gets pinned down because Kallus has arrived with more reinforcements. And Kallus is like, "We have you pinned down, future boyfriend!" And Zeb is like, "Hey, you still have half a season before we're boyfriends!" And Ezra is all fed up with the boyfriend talk because they have to get back to Lothal, and he doesn't have time to be stuck in Imperial blaster fire when he can un-Batman himself and find his parents. I don't know what I'm just saying. I lost my spot in the middle of that sentence. Blah. And he runs out there into the frayed, and he goes into beast mode. And there's a moment where I actually really thought that Ezra was going to kill Kallus. But Ezra force pushes him at the last minute and knocks Kallus out. And they've beaten all the stormtroopers! Yay! Just in time for the Inquisitors to stroll in! No! And the Inquisitors are there to fuck up their day. But Ezra is in a rage, and he stupidly runs right at the Inquisitors. And Kanan, the wonderful cowboy Jedi he is, whips out his blaster and takes a shot and blasts out the panel to make the doors shut before Ezra gets himself killed. And Kanan is like, "Look, Ezra, I know how important getting to Lothal is." "No!" Ezra shoots back at him. "You never knew your parents! Because the Jedi Order took you from them, so you never had any concept of parents other than the weird religious cult that you were raised in." And Kanan's like, "You're right. You're right. I never knew my parents. You're right. But we will do everything we can to help you get back to yours." And Ezra calms down at that. And Zeb is like, "This is adorable, but we have Inquisitors trying to bust through that door. Can we go now?" And they head back to the Ghost. Meanwhile, Sabine and Hera has the comms back up, and Phoenix Squadron is in a panic, but Grunkle Rex and Commander Sato are deploying an escape plan and gives the word for everyone to get out of there. And the boys get back just in time as Hera launches, and Space Mom goes into Captain Syndulla mode, leading out Phoenix Squadron. The entire city is under siege from the Imperials. Constantine is there, ready to catch the ships in his tractor beams. Zeb hops on the guns while Kanan, Chopper, and Ezra head for the Phantom minivan to get out of there and get back to Lothal. They split the Phantom from the Ghost, and it's a dogfight in the sky. Commander Sato's ship, it gets caught in the tractor beam. And I remember this is the first time, and I remember the first time I saw this episode, this was the 157th time I was scared that Rex might die. And Hera calls Kanan and says that she's going back for Sato, and she gives them an order to take their opening and go, and she wishes Ezra luck and heads back. And Kanan says, "Don't worry, she's always been Space Mom and awesome." Well, Sabine's got a crazy Sabine plan, and Hera loves crazy Sabine plans. They fly in close to the Star Destroyer, and Constantine, King of Hubris, first of his name, decides to ignore. "Have you learned nothing, Constantine?" Anyway, the plan is to have Sabine shoot out the tractor beams with the torpedoes. But with too many ties around, Hera just fucking rams the tractor beam dish with the Ghost and knocks it out like a badass. And with that, Sato's ship is free, and they all, with the Ghost, get the heck and heck out of there. and King Constantine, Hubris Lord, first of his name, is pretty pissed off, but he really should have read Kallus's reports every once in a while, you know? Why'd you think Act 2?
This is the most visual part of the episode, I thought. Like, I love the purple light of the planet. And then you get that spaceship fight in the atmosphere over a city, and that's always just beautiful, you know, from the Star Destroyers coming into the atmosphere to them fighting and tractor beams being involved. It was really just visually nice.
I have a note about that too, because there's a great shot where Kanan is breaking away from the ghost and he veers the ship to the left, and it looks like a video game because you see it come out of the ghost and veer, and you see the city like turn, and like I looked at that and I was like, that's a ride at Disneyland right there.
My only other notes are just a couple like little dialogue references. We got the Inquisitors using Obi-Wan's "Well, hello there" line.
Yeah.
When they show up, and then you have a quote from a Mel Brooks high anxiety movie, which is the "I don't got it" line, unless Mel Brooks stole it from somewhere else. But that's the first place I heard that line. Mm-hmm. So I think they were quoting Mel Brooks' High Anxiety. Which is a first. But that's all I really got on this part.
Well, for me, my first line, my note is, I'm very proud of my Imperial boy. Because Kallus actually had a pretty good plan. And he had them pinned down. And if Ezra wasn't in his protagonist rage, I think Kallus would have had a really good shot there. But Ezra just happened to be in protagonist rage and knocked him out. And I actually thought, like, Kallus was going to die. When Ezra was, like, running at Kallus with a lightsaber, I remember the first time I watched this episode, I was like, is Ezra going to kill Kallus? Oh, my God. And then, he force pushed him back, and he, like, flew through the air and knocked out. But I had a legit moment, because he was killing stormtroopers. He killed the two troopers around Kallus. And I for sure thought Kallus was going to die. I never noticed it before, because usually when Ezra uses his staple gun blaster mode of his lightsaber, it's usually short range. But here we got to see it, like, him missing shots. And it's cool because it has a light trail. You see, like, the, like, wah-wah-wah-wah-wah-wah-wah of it, like, leaving a light trail. And that's a really cool effect that I've never noticed before.
Yeah, we haven't had a really long, like, where he's shooting to, like, in a triangulating sort of way. So, yeah.
Yeah. It was just a really cool effect that I was like, that's cool. Because usually he just shoots people up close, or, like, we just see, like, the blast hit them. We don't actually see it, like, miss and, like, continue down the hallway. It was really cool. My next note is a two-part note. It's still in early seasons, but I find it really interesting that Kanan still uses his blaster as much as he does. Like, it worked in this fight to, like, save Zeb because they were running in, but once they were pinned down, he was using his blaster, and I had a moment I was like, wouldn't your lightsaber be more effective in this moment? Because then you could block shots. Why are you relying on your blaster in this? And so I think it's really interesting that, like, Kanan hasn't made that, like, full transition into, like, Jedi Knight. Like, he's still Cowboy Jedi, which is why he still relies on his blaster as much as he does.
Well, yeah. Well, they were sort of in a blast. They were sort of not in a close quarters fight either, though. So, I don't know. I think they were trying to be the aggressor rather than to be, you know, if you're sitting there with the lightsaber, you're sitting there, you know, blocking shots, but they're, you know, moving in on their pincer position. So they were trying to take the offensive.
Yeah. I just kept thinking of, like, Clone Wars, where it's like they'd be in similar positions, but they would be the Jedi, like, using their lightsabers, just, like, smacking blasts back at them.
They'd have a battalion of clone troopers behind them with the blasters.
But they would still be, like, little ones, where it'd just be, like Rex, Anakin, and, like, Ahsoka. Like, doing that. I don't know. I thought it was, like, it made sense when they were running in. Because they were running in and shooting troopers. But once they were pinned down, I was like, Kanan's lightsaber would probably be a lot more effective here. And it was a weird thought for me. And I was like, yeah, he just hasn't really fully transitioned to Jedi Knight yet, to where he solely relies on that. It helps not having eyes in season 3. Because then he can't see what to shoot at.
Yeah. Spoiler. That helps.
And then I started thinking, I don't think we've ever gotten a scene where Kanan uses both a blaster and his lightsaber at the same time, and he dual wields them. And that would be awesome to see him, like, shoot, shoot, blast, blast. And the only thing I could think of off the top of my head was his fight with Grande, because he was using the blaster function of Ezra's staple gun with his own saber, but I don't think he's ever used, like, a blaster and a saber, which, man, he'd be a beast. But if he has, I'm just blanking. I don't remember. I could only think of the staple gun fight with Grande.
Yeah, I can't think of any time.
Yeah. Sorry, it's been a couple days since I've done these notes. I'm just reading, so I know. Okay. So my next note is about when Ezra was like, "You never knew your parents," and Kanan was like, "Yeah, I know." And I really love that they addressed that, because Kanan never knew his parents versus Ezra, who did. And we've seen this before with Anakin in the prequels, and it reminded me a lot of that. But I think the difference between, like, Kanan with Ezra versus Anakin with the Jedi is Kanan is letting Ezra experience this, like, these feelings. He's being honest with Ezra, which the Jedi were not honest with Anakin. They told him to, like, swallow your feelings and to forget your mom. And Kanan's not doing that. He's like, Ezra, like, I'm here. I'm going to help you find your parents if we can. Like, I'm here for you. And I like that. And most importantly, like, he's not making Ezra forget his parents, which is so important. Where the Jedi were like, you need to forget your mom, Anakin. And Anakin was like, oh, I saw my mom, like, my mom's still alive, guys. I remember her. Like, she was there. I can't just forget her. You know, she's in my brain. And I think that's a huge, very important moment for Kanan to not only, like, let Ezra feel, but telling him, like, we will find them. And that's huge. That's a Jedi step there.
Well, you know, I don't think Kanan ever learned that lesson, you know. I mean, the ones that were advising, doing that kind of advice were, like, the Mace Windus and the Yodas, the older guys. And they're all gone. That whole hierarchy is gone. So there's just no, you know, they would, when you had the whole Jedi Order, you would have them thinking, oh, you know, to keep someone in control, we got to do this. Or they might have just done it with Anakin because they knew Anakin was like a atom bomb, basically. It had to be handled with kid gloves, and they messed up trying to, you know, I don't know if that was their wet blanket, you know, answer for everything. But yeah. You know, this is what we're seeing from this point on. The Jedi is not a part of a huge power structure, but as a, like, more individual, personal thing.
Yeah. And the second part I have to that note is I also love that Kanan acknowledged that he never knew his parents. Because it's true. He doesn't know what parents are. He never experienced parents. He doesn't have any idea what it's like to have parents, because all he had was the Jedi Order. But I like that he's trying to understand Ezra as a person. Like, he's being open and honest. He's like, I don't know what it's like, but I will do what I can to understand what you're going through. And I know I joke about him being a space dad, but he really has taken on this parental role, and I don't think he realizes it because he just doesn't know. And I love it, because Kanan's just such a good Jedi. Like, he's my favorite Jedi for a reason. He gets being a Jedi right. And I've said that multiple times on the show, like, he gets being a Jedi right. And I love that it's a concept that's foreign to him, but he is trying his damnedest to understand for Ezra. And that's what makes him so good.
The only thing that was pissing me off about that scene is they're having that whole conversation. You don't close a door on two inquisitors with lightsabers and then stand with your back against, like, 2 inches from that door.
I was waiting for a lightsaber to come through the door.
That's what I thought was going to happen, is it was going to come out, like, just over his shoulder, and and then, oh, time to go. But it's just like, yeah, you don't do that. You immediately get back away from that door and leave, and not just stand there and have a conversation. They're just on the other side of a door. They can poke their lightsabers through.
Which is why I'm glad Zeb was there. He was like, this is nice. Let's go. Because like right when I was about to have that thought where I'm just like, they're having this conversation and I'm waiting for a lightsaber to come to the door. That was when Zeb walked up. He was like, this is great. Let's run. Yeah. Let's run away now, guys. Talk later. So like just when I was having that thought, Zeb spoke up. So I didn't have that problem with it because it happened right when Zeb started talking. And I was just like, yay, they addressed it. Okay. I didn't have a problem with it. My next note is, poor Garel. I thought about what Pablo Hidalgo said about the rebels try not to go to populated areas for bases. And we see why here, because the city is just getting destroyed. There's a shot where the ghost lifts up above the city and the city is on like just smoking. Entire city is smoking. And it also kind of reminded me of a preview of the final episode where Thrawn is doing the exact same thing to Lothal's capital. Where he's bombarding it, and this is why. And all I could think about was like what I had read from Pablo Hidalgo, which was, you know, what was the exact line? Scroll back, right past, scroll. You do not want to jeopardize a population by fighting for the virtue of that population, which that's all I kept thinking about during that scene when I saw that. And my last note is, and this is his new nickname, guys, because I messaged Chris and I was like, I came up with a new nickname for Constantine. And this will be his name from here on out, which is Constantine, King of Hubris, first of his name. And look at him being a fucking dumbass in this episode.
That's what the job of the Imperials are.
I just love it because they're like, sir, the ghost is coming up really close to it. And he's just like, it's just one ship. It's not going to matter. And it fucking matters because Hera rams her ship into the tractor beam. Free Sato. Sato gets out of there and Constantine ignored it and looked like a fucking dumbass. He's so full of himself. And like the more I thought about it, I was like, that is Constantine's story. It's a story of hubris and how it just fucking fails him on every turn. I love Constantine. He's so great. Constantine, King of Hubris, first of his name. Little Game of Thrones reference there. So that's his name. I put that on Twitter and people laughed at it, so I thought it was funny. I thought it was perfect for him. But that's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 3.
Act 3. Ezra and Kanan arrive back on Lothal, and Kanan's chipper about how easy it was to get on Lothal with no blockade around. I mean, honestly, Constantine should have at least left, like, one ship on the planet, but he's not the smartest Imperial, as we've seen already. And Ezra then goes quiet a moment before very honestly telling Kanan thank you for everything that he's doing for Ezra. And Kanan says that he understands he understands what Ezra is going through because he lost his master and he was alone for a while, and Kanan doesn't want Ezra to be alone anymore. And they started by going back to Ezra's old home on Lothal, which was destroyed back during the episode Siege of Lothal. And Ezra is understandably having emotions, seeing his old home burned and not knowing where his parents are. And Kanan tells him to slow down and trust the Force to guide him. Reaching out with the Force, he senses a presence, and the white Loth cat from his dreams hops out of the old bunker. And Ezra connects with it. Gives that good little kitty a nice belly rub, and he's like, you're a good kitty. And the Loth Cat's like, hey, I'm a good kitty, thank you. And he's like, oh, you're so cute, Loth Cat. He's like, I know, I'm a really cute Loth Cat, thanks. And he asks the cat to take them to whoever it belongs to. And the cat springs up and dashes away, and Ezra sprints after it. And Kanan's like, yep, this is our life now. We're chasing cats, which is like parroting, which is sometimes like herding cats. Yep, this is my life. And Ezra is dashing through the streets, trying his best to keep up with the cat. And he loses the cat for a moment when he's almost ran over by a speeder. And he spots the cat again, and it's on the back of a mysterious man's speeder. And the speeder flies away, and Kanan's like, what now? And Ezra says that he can track the Loth Cat. And Kanan's like, wow, that's pretty impressive that you can track a Loth Cat with the Force. And Ezra's like, ha, I put a tracker on the cat. And Kanan's like, of course you did. And they follow the signal out to some mountains where the Lothcat is waiting for them. And as they get off the Phantom minivan, someone shoots at them. Ezra recognizes it's the person from his vision, who's not too happy to have intruders there, and continues to shoot at them. But when Ezra gives his name, and the names of Ephraim and Mira Bridger, the man stops shooting at them. And he says that he's Ryder Azadi, and he does know Ezra's parents. Ryder takes them back to his camp, and he says that he was the old governor of Lothal, and he supported the Bridgers' transmissions against the Empire. Ryder was sent to prison for treason because of this. And, for a shiny moment, Ezra looks really hopeful. But then, Ezra reads the room, and he reads Ryder's face, and Ezra realizes that he is in fact Batman, and his parents are dead. But all aboard the Fields train, because it gets worse! Turns out, Ezra's parents were still alive in season one. They were there. They were alive. And they heard Ezra's message when he made a podcast back in the episode Call to Action. And that inspired them to fight back, even in jail. And they helped lead a jailbreak, but they were killed in the process. And Ezra had been inspired by his parents' lessons, and they learned from him and helped save a lot of lives in the process. And then Kanan, the wonderful space dad he is, and the good Jedi he is, pulls his Padawan space son into a hug and comforts him. And a little bit later, Ezra is sitting on Pride Rock, looking up at the twin moons of Lothal, and he's quietly mourning his loss, and the Force gives him one last vision. He's standing on his old tower back in Lothal, looking over a perfect version of what the planet could have been without the Empire. And Ephraim and Mira come up on either side of their son, and they look out over their planet. And then they tell Ezra, through the Force, that they're very proud of their son. And I'm crying. And I started crying so hard. Because, like, super thanks to Jonna Marie and Ma from Geeky Bubble for making me love Ezra. Because I used to really hate Ezra, and this episode used to be a very meh episode to me. But now, because I love Ezra, I, like, really appreciated the scene for the first time. And I was, like, literally crying through this scene. Like, as I was typing these notes, I was just like, oh, I love Ezra. And they're proud of Ezra. And the Force is proud for Ezra, too. So, guys, go listen to Geeky Bubble. They really do amazing work, and they helped me cry in this episode. Thanks, guys. Anyway, Ezra's parents tell him that change is normal, and things are already changing. And they tell him to be strong and to have hope. And then Kanan comes out there, and he probably says one of the most iconic lines of Rebels, which to me is one of the most iconic lines of Rebels. The moons are setting, it will be morning soon. Which really summarizes this episode well, because we all have dark times, but light will come. You just have to believe that it will be. And when people are gone, they will always live inside of your memory. The end. What did you think of Act 3?
That was pretty good. I see, I'm not, the Ezra's parents thing just like took all the feels out of it for me. I couldn't get over it. And I don't trust Ryder Azadi. I think like the thing that was bugging me about this is, okay. As we already discussed, doesn't really sound like he saw Ezra's parents died. So it was like, are they still trying to keep that a possibility, and now Ezra thinks his parents are dead and they're going to show up sometime? And I was like, ugh, I just don't want to deal with that. But like, doesn't it seem suspicious that like when they're getting shot at by him at first, and Ezra's like, I'm Ezra Bridger, and he's just like, pew pew, I don't care, pew pew pew. But then when he like says his parents, and it's like, oh, you're okay. But then later on, the story tells Ezra almost feels like he's like not really blowing smoke up his ass, but sort of making it up to make Ezra feel better or something, because he sort of gives Ezra, oh yeah, they heard your speech and they were very proud of you, and they were, you know, they knew it was you, they recognized your voice, that was definitely you. And it's like, oh, so you're well aware of who Ezra Bridger is, but you still shot at him until like he brought up his parents. It was just kind of weird, you know. He was should have been like, Ezra Bridger, I loved your holocaust, you know.
He might not have realized, like, he might have wondered if it was a trick, but something that only Ezra would probably know, or very few people know, is Ezra's parents' real name. Because I think Ryder even said, like, I can't believe you remember me. And because Ezra didn't recognize Ryder at first. Like, he didn't recognize him in his dream, and he didn't recognize Ryder at first until Ryder gave his name. And then he was like, oh, yeah, I know who you are. I remember you. And he's like, really? You're really tiny. So he might not have believed that it was Ezra at first until he said his parents' name. That's how I took it.
I don't trust Pointy Rex. He looks like a Pointy Rex. Is he the same guy who did Yularen? Because he sounds like he's got a little bit of Yularen's voice in him.
No, that's Tom King. He was Savage Opress, Maul's brother in Clone Wars. He was also, what's his name in Thor Ragnarok? He's the fire demon. Sulfur?
Oh, okay.
Because I remember when I was watching Thor Ragnarok, I was like, I know this man's voice. And then I went home and I looked it up. I was like, oh, it's Ryder and Savage. Okay, I remember this. It's Clancy Brown. Okay. So yeah, he was Savage's voice actor in Clone Wars.
But my only other note is, these are like, the Lothcats are like Ezra's training animals as he works up to bigger and badder animals.
Bigger and badder
animals. Whales and wolves and stuff. But that's all I got.
I know you just asked a question of like, don't you think this blah, blah, blah. And this was probably not the good week to ask me that question, Chris, because my answer is no, because I actually feel really bad looking back at this episode the second time, because this is my second time watching it. And I remember the first time I watched it, I was still very much in my phase where I really didn't like Ezra. I found him annoying. I thought he was just full of protagonist stuff. And I had only seen this episode once because at the time I just wasn't a fan of him. And I kind of blew off this episode because I was just like, meh, it's the Ezra parents episode, whatever. And like, I have never seen it again. But now that like I'm revisiting this episode, it's an incredibly deep episode on multiple levels. I mean, for one, it just solidifies the Space family. I and Kanan and Ezra are just great from beginning to end with how much they're just supporting Ezra. And Kanan, like we were just talking about in Act 2, like he's trying so hard to understand this concept of parents, even though he has never had parents because he loves Ezra. And Sabine and Zeb want to help Ezra get back to his parents and find his parents. And even Chopper. Chopper is very somber in this final scene because when the truth comes out about his parents, there's a little scene where Chopper reaches up and he puts his hand on Ezra's knee while he's crying into Kanan. So, like, to me, like, this is a very solid Space family episode. And this is also, like, a really big episode for Rebels as a whole. And I can't believe I haven't revisited it before because it tackles a lot of emotional things on many, many levels. And they handle a lot of like heavy material, like loss. Like, how do you deal with loss? How do you move on with loss? And I really felt that the second time around. I think a lot of it is because I didn't used to like Ezra. I never really like mourned his parents or mourned for Ezra or like felt his sadness. But the second time through, now that I like Ezra, I really felt it for the first time. Like, I felt him having that loss. And, like, that's what got me at the end, where I was just like, holy cow, like, I'm actually feeling this episode for the first time ever. So, like, it was quite a ride, and I have no, like, I just have to thank Jonna and Ma for making me like Ezra, because it really made this episode hit home for me.
I agree that they got to where they got to, but I was not... I felt
you're that, a cynical like, old man.
I felt the process that they did was not like they could have planned it out better, or it felt like they put this together out of something that they started another way, and they ended up with this end result, but they could have ended up with it in a lot more smoother fashion, I thought.
Yeah, I think for me it was like I found it easy to overlook a lot of the like execution flaws because I thought they hit the emotional notes really well. So that allowed me to kind of be like, yes, there are times where the story with Ezra's parents has been wonky since day one, and how they've told that and stuff like that, and how they what they didn't tell. But I think when it came to this episode, I was able to overlook a lot of it because I think they sold the emotions well. Like, I have a note further down that I got really emotional watching Ezra learning the truth about his parents. It hit me really hard this time around, because it was heartbreaking that they were alive in season one. Like, there was a chance that they could have been reunited and that they were alive in season one, and he missed them by that much. And Taylor Gray really sells, Taylor Gray is Ezra's voice actor, and he really sells that scene really well. And he acts the fuck out of it. And so, like, I was able to overlook a lot of this stuff because, I'll jump up to my other note, because this is another transition episode. We've been talking all season about transition episodes and how this season is kind of breaking away from the season one formula because we're shifting the characters away from who they were in season one. And it wasn't just for Ezra to move on from his parents and to, like, move on with the rebels. It was also a transition of for the Space family and them taking that role in their life and in Ezra's life and being that new family. And it was an episode that he needed to move finally away from his old life and focus on the rebellion, because if they didn't have that transition for the entire show, there would always be that threat of, like, he could always leave to go back to his parents. But this was like, no, this is the cut of the parent thread. It's done. Ezra can now move forward and be a full rebel. So I thought it was really effective in that way to be like, this is an old Ezra moving into new Ezra now.
I agree.
Yeah. My last note out of all of this, at the end of this episode, because I love that line from Kanan, the moons are setting, it will be morning soon. And I've always loved that line about death and how to handle death. And that's what it's always symbolized for me, that, like, you know, moon set, like, darkness falls, but there's always going to be light that's coming. And when I was watching this final scene and I messaged you about it, I thought of our friend Sean. And if you guys have listened to the show from the beginning, or if you're new listeners and you don't know this and you haven't gone back, our very first episode of Jagaz and Jedi opens with us talking about our friend Sean, who passed away very shortly before we even started the show. Like, he never heard an episode of our show. And I just found myself, like, really thinking about Sean in this episode at the end, and it just made me really miss him, because, like, that was a loss for our network. Like, that was a loss. He was our friend. And it just reminded me of how it was the line that I think Kanan said, that, like, people live on in the Force. They live on in our memory. They live on in our stories, and they never really die. And it made me kind of really think about him, because, like, we still have podcasts of Sean. Like, we still can go back and listen to his shows. His family can listen to their shows. So it just really made me think of Sean a lot this time around, too. I just jumped through, like, seven notes.
Now it did for me.
I just jumped to, like, seven notes. I'm so sorry. I was jumping all over the place on that one.
Hey, do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Hold the flow, man.
Yeah, I think all I have left is tiny notes. So my next one is, I love Lothcats. Whenever I go to Star Wars World at Disney, I plan to buy a Tuca Lothcat from there, because they're so cute. I love the white Lothcat. I'm big letters I wrote. Kanan hugs Ezra, and it's so important that he lets Ezra feel things and process emotions as a Jedi. So important. We've talked about it a lot, about how Kanan is really good in that aspect.
Yep.
And then the final scene where Kanan and Ezra are standing on Pride Rock and they're looking at the moons, and Kanan and Hera, and not Hera, Ezra has the Force vision. The music is just really nice in that scene.
The music's nice in general in this whole episode.
Yeah, the music has, like, kind of a, they don't use choir a lot in Star Wars and in Rebels. They don't have, like, the, like, ooh, of, like, choir singing, but it was really nice here, because it actually kind of sounded like being in a church during a funeral and hearing a choir sing. That's what it really reminded me of being in a church and hearing that. So, like, the music was just really, really nice this time around. Do you counterpoint anything I say?
Not really. No, you know, I don't disagree with any of anything you say. It just didn't work as well for me. You know what I mean? The mechanics of it didn't get me in the feels for this one, because I was too busy being like, well, they could like. I remember the first time through, I felt pretty much the same way about it.
You know, I yeah.
And this time, I know it's like it's. I don't want to say it's going nowhere. It's going nowhere as far as like him finding his parents go. And I just felt that they could have gotten to this point earlier or in a different way. You know, I wish they hadn't taken the false thing of like, oh, maybe he's going to find his parents. I don't think it really, you know,
needed to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it needed to happen. They could have gone just right to this part.
Because
they did it and then they just abandoned it. And then it was like, oh, that just happened in an episode. And I guess we forgot about it. And it's like, oh, no, we haven't forgot about it. But here it is back again because we kind of have to address. You know, there's a lot of writing, storytelling mechanics going on that don't quite wear.
And I agree with that. Like, I think it was very weird that they waited almost an entire season. And timeline of watching this, it would have been about a year. About a year's worth, because Empire Day and Gathering Forces, I think, was the episode after it, was probably about a solid year before this aired, before this one aired. And I did think it was kind of weird that they waited that long to bring back up SIBO and, like, what happened in that episode, because I forgot about it until they mentioned it, and I was like, oh, yeah, SIBO. And I agree. Like, I do have problems with how they've always addressed Ezra's parents. I think they could have always handled it more differently and a little bit better writing wise. And for me, a lot of it is I just wish we knew a little bit more. I think this could have had an even bigger emotional payoff if we actually had like some kind of time with Ephraim and Mira. And it might have been the episode Empire Day, where I mentioned like I wish we got more. I think it was that episode. But I think for me, like this time around, like I totally agree. Like there are flaws in them writing this story, but I feel like the emotions and how they handled like the heavy subject matter, how they handled Kanan and Hera reacting to Ezra, how they handled Ezra in this episode. I think they handled it emotionally in a very heavy storyline very well. So I was able to like ignore a lot of like the mechanic flaws of writing. Because I think that they nailed what they needed to nail on this, which was cutting the parents' thread, letting Ezra mourn, and now he can move on. And I think that all the actors sold it, like Freddie Prinze Jr., Taylor Gray, Vanessa Marshall, like they all sold this episode very well, and they handled it well. So I was able to ignore a lot of the flaws because this is not a perfect episode. It has flaws, but I think emotionally I think they got it right for me. So, yeah. I agree. Well, that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
No, you want my score?
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to be way different.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think I was just providing a counterpoint to what you're saying. Because, yeah, his family stuff, the parent stuff always has annoyed me. And it kind of annoys me more in the second time around. Because I do know that it just sort of, you know, it's not going, and it still seemed like it the first time through at this point to me it still seemed like they could be still going with it, and now I know they're not, which made me even like even more so. But I still, visually it's a stunning episode, and you know, even with the Ezra story stuff, it's just I gave it an 8.5. I thought it was a really good episode.
Wow, I thought you were going to at least do like in the sevens the way you were talking about it.
No, I guess I was just trying to I mean, it was it's the parent storyline that's holding me back. But a lot of it, a lot of that parent storyline, the stank of it comes from other episodes of this too. So I'm trying not to hold that against this particular episode.
That makes sense.
So yeah, 8.5. I enjoyed it a lot. It was really well done and executed for the most part.
Yeah, for me, like, I can't believe I blew off this episode for so long, just because I didn't used to like Ezra. Because this is a very powerful and amazing episode. It's beautiful. The message is there. It's a very deep and important message. And it's not just for, like, this is a great episode for the space family, like, from beginning to end. But, like, also, like, what it's trying to talk about. Like, it's it's handling a message of death and loss and how to handle loss and what to do. You know, and like we haven't talked about, this is a very important message in a kid's show. By teaching kids about loss. Like, that's a big thing. Like, we didn't talk about that. About how, like, a kid's show is handling death and loss and, like, how to handle that.
Well, and that's been an ongoing conversation all the way since the beginning of Clone Wars, you know, yeah. In a lot of ways.
Yeah. And it's just done really well, and it handles such a heavy subject matter very tactfully, and it's a beautiful episode. So I actually gave it a 9.5 out of 10.
I figured you were going to be up there on this one.
I actually was very surprised by the end of it. Like, when I was writing this, I was like, I can't believe I'm scoring this episode so high, and I used to really not like this episode. Like, I used to really
That's
not like this
episode. That's what makes it fun going through it the second time.
I know. Like, it was really like watching it with new eyes, because a lot of it, I forgot a lot of, like, little tidbits in this episode, too. There was just so much of this episode I forgot about, and I was excited to see Ryder again. Like, now that I have the background context from Thrawn, the Thrawn novel, I'm excited to watch Ryder through this entire series to see, like, how good of a good guy he really is, knowing that he blackmailed an innocent woman for rebels. It kind of reminded me of Saw Gerrera a little bit. You know, how Saw Gerrera was a terrorist. And,
yeah.
And I'm not saying that, like, Ryder is Saw Gerrera, because Saw Gerrera is a fucking terrorist. But Ryder's, you know, for the good of trying to beat the Empire, he blackmailed an innocent woman and sent her to jail. And I was like, God, that's borderline bad. Even if it was for a good reason, that's not how you do it. So I'm excited to watch, like, Ryder through this. I'm particularly excited to watch Ryder and Orinda together in season 4. Like, that's what I'm really looking forward to. So, well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from Twitter, and I've been sort of sitting on these for a little while. You know, I've been kind of gathering these the last few months, because our friend Paul C. Kelly has been working his way through some of the canon novels that we've covered between Clone Wars and Rebels. So he's been, like, just sending me updates of, like, hey, I'm at this point in the novel. And I'm like, that's cool. Tell me about it. Like, what do you think? And, like, so we've been talking about this for a few months now, and I've been just kind of slowly gathering them. So I'm just going to do a dump. So I have them separated by novel. So.
Okay. So this is going to be fun, because it's obviously a very friendly conversation, but I have to make Hope sound completely bitchy and condescending about it. So, all right. So on the Ahsoka novel, Paul C. Kelly writes, I would have to say, for a young adult novel, the Ahsoka Tano story so far has some pretty gory deaths. LOL. Ooh, Colvin yeah. just got sliced in half. LOL. Ooh, yeah. Hope says, yeah, it's got some dark bits in it. And then Paul says, Bail Organa was definitely one smart SOB. Oh, yes. To be able to deceive the Empire into thinking he was not up to anything. Even more impressive is that he was deceiving Palpatine, unless Palpatine knew the whole time and just decided to let Tarkin blow up Alderaan in A New Hope. But I think he had Palpatine duped for a long time. All right, and now we're going into the Thrawn novel, which of course has much more text to it.
Yeah, he's currently reading that, and which is why, like, early on in the episode, I was just like,
"Well,
Paul,
we noticed."
Tune out.
We will notice Hope has a lot more to say on this one.
My husband.
Okay, Paul says, at about page 120 of the Thrawn novel, Eli Vanto is hating his life right now. LOL. Hope says, Elo Vantile is my precious boy. I suggest listening to a little bit of the audiobook. Eli has a thick cowboy accent, and he's wonderful. And Paul says, nice. I feel like Eli Vanto at my work. LOL. Where is that promotion? Oh, yeah. And Hope says, Eli is so relatable in so many ways. After you finish the book, I suggest taking a look at the comic, because they give Eli the best faces. And then she added a picture of Eli's face judging Thrawn. Paul said, ha ha, nice. That is probably after one of Thrawn's promotions. And who's staying behind? Hope says, Thrawn Alliances is an absolute trip. I don't know if Timothy Zahn meant for it to be a comedy, but the book is freaking hilarious. It's little shit Clone Wars Anakin teamed up with early Thrawn, and then the Rebel Thrawn is just trolling the shit out of Vader. It's not as good as the 2015 Thrawn story-wise, but it's worth it just to watch them both fuck with each other for like 400 pages. And Paul says, Constantine's name was just thrown out in the Thrawn novel. Love the continuity. And then Hope says, I keep forgetting to write back to you, but I'm super excited that you're enjoying the Thrawn novel.
And so the next part was, it was a super nice tweet because Paul reached out to our guest from a couple months ago because we had Jonna Marie and Ma from Geeky Bubble on our show a few months ago. And he had reached out to them, and it was just a really nice tweet. So I just really wanted to include it. And so what this contest was, they just posted their new episode where they just had covered the Saw Gerrera arc in Clone Wars, which, by the way, is a very interesting episode because Ma's first experience with Saw Gerrera was Rebels. Then she saw him in Rogue One, and then she just went back and watched him in Clone Wars. So she watched him out of order. So I would suggest that episode from them because it's really interesting about like how she viewed Saw, because she definitely didn't go in chronological order when they all came right out. So, but yeah, so that's what this is in context with.
So Paul says, I heard you both on Jay Guys and Jedi and started listening to your episodes. Glad I did. You both are tattooing suns to look forward to on a gloomy day or to brighten an already sunny day. Oh, yeah. And then Ma from Geeky Bubble said, oh, my God, that is so beautiful. Thank you. I'm not going to try to do your voice.
Yeah, Ma.
And then she starts awesome swearing.
Yeah, Ma's too awesome. You can't give her a voice.
And then Hope said, be careful, Ma. Once you get a Paul Kelly, he never leaves. And he's wonderful. And Ma says, welcome one, welcome all. Yeah, she says that now.
Yeah. Seriously, guys, go listen to Geeky Bubble. They're wonderful.
Yes. So,
I think I picked... Did you pick Candy last week, or did I?
I don't remember.
There's a Mars brownie. It's a black one. It's a limited edition.
Ooh, okay.
So if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats, and he's weird. So our friend Dario sent us candy from all over the world to review. And this week, as soon as I find it, the Mars.
Yeah, Mars. Where's that from?
Oh, the limited edition Mars brownie is from England. So as always, thank you, Dario. We love you.
I'm wondering, is this going to actually be... I mean, does brownie even mean the same thing in England as in America?
I can already tell there's caramel in it because it's stuck to my paper.
Yeah, no, it's just a...
I'm still trying to get mine open because the caramel is melted to the paper and I'm like peeling it back. Get off my brownie candy! Get off, I want to eat you!
It's get got off. Brown nougat in it. Is brown nougat... chocolate and caramel. It's good.
Okay. Yeah. That's delicious. I'm getting caramel all over myself. I'm all sticky now.
Burger.
Wow, it's really sweet though.
Sweeter
than what I was expecting. Thank you, Dario. We love you.
It does sort of, texturally, it is reminiscent of a brownie.
Yeah, it has the mouthfeel of a brownie, but...
Yes. I think that's the first time we've used mouthfeel on our candy. Haven't heard the term mouthfeel in a long time. We gotta use that all the time.
I'm covered in caramel. Because it was stuck to the wrapping. So the wrapping just like flopped over on my hand and just got caramel all over my hands. So I need to wash my hands in a minute. Before I touch anything else on my computer. Because I now have caramel all over my fingers and my hands. But that was really good. Thank you. It was just way sweeter than I thought it was going to be. Well, did you have anything else for Legacy?
I do not.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our website, and we post all our podcasts there. All our podcasters post their podcasts there all the time, day in, day out. Hardly a day goes by when a podcast or two doesn't pop up on there. So You can go there, sign up for our RSS feed, or you can sign up through iTunes. You can see all our shows at the Two True Freak podcast page on Facebook, and we've got the Two True Freaks Cantina page on Facebook, which is just that, a cantina where we go to hang out. We are also on Twitter, and we post all our stuff there, and there's all sorts of tweeting going on by the mad podcaster. Oh, I just inhaled like part of my Mars bar while talking. That's the risk of this end part of the show, is just inhaling our candy as we wrap up.
Well, you gave me the idea for the song now, so.
And that Twitter feed is run by the incomparable Gene, the podcasting machine.
This is gonna suck and destroy my voice, but.
Emphajima, Gina. That was bad. But that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope? Where find they can you, Hope?
Oh, you can find me at JGuys and Jedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. I'm kind of taking a little bit of a summer hiatus, probably when Resistance rolls back around. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get to do my Resistance rewatch, but I'm starting to feel a little bit more inspiration because I've been listening to Sky Talkers and their talk of Resistance. I'm starting to feel that. I'm hoping I can still fit in a Resistance rewatch so I can do a little write-up before season 2 starts. Mm. But that's Geeky Girl Experience. And I also write fan fiction. My main stories are Forces of Gravity on AO3. It's a Thrawn fan fiction. I also have a side project called The Lucky Leku, which is also on AO3. And I actually just wrote a story this week. Jonna from Geeky Bubble, who I've mentioned a few times in this episode, her birthday's coming up. So I wrote her a little Ezra story. It's post-Rebels, when he is on the Chimera. And it's called The Color of Hope. And I wrote Jonna a little birthday present. So it's only like 300 words, but she was very, very lovely about it. And so, yeah, that's where you can find me. That's AO3 is short for Archive of Our Own. So you can take a look at it up there. What's next week? I think next week is the Leia episode.
I have no idea.
I think it's the Leia episode, which I'm very interested
in. Oh, you're right. It is. It's a Princess on Lothal or whatever. I don't think I saw... there's two with her in it, right? It's a two-part story, isn't it?
No, it's just the one.
It's just one. I have never... This is one I've never seen.
Which is why I'm really interested in what you're going to think about it, because I am too,
because before I saw it, you know, I mean, she was still alive, so I didn't really... You know, Carrie Fisher was still alive, I should say.
She doesn't do the voice of Leia.
No, but I mean, like... I just was like, oh, that's cool, Princess Leia's in it. But now I'm more interested to see, you know, how it all fits in.
You know, and this is another episode I've only seen once. So, like, I remember very little of it. I remember... All I remember from it is, like, Ezra's just like, whatever, you're and then that's it. Like, that's all I remember of the episode. Is Ezra's a little snooty because Leia sasses Ezra, and Ezra doesn't like when Leia sasses him. That's all I remember. So I'm really interested to watch it too, because I really don't remember it, and I'm excited to see what you say because you've never seen it. So right. This is going to be fun.
All right. Well, I hope it's fun for the rest of you guys.
Next week, we're just going to be like, oh, God. I doubt that. I trust David.
Yeah, I doubt it too.
It's going to be awesome. I can't wait. But that's all I have. I don't know how to end this. I'm just gonna get up from my computer and just kind of walk away. So,
go watch your game. We'll see you next week.
You gotta end the episode now. So
yes.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Well, I just
can't. We haven't edited it yet. I can still hear you.
Hi.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2. You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too. Thanks for listening. And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
That is freaky.